Hello.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I've been really looking forward to connecting with you here.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, Jenny, I first heard about you from our mutual friend Liz, and she mentioned this book, Living on the Front Line, Lessons from 10 Years in Africa. And as I was reading it, I thought, I've got to meet this person. I hope people do pick up the book. There are a couple of things, though, that I think we can learn from just asking you a few questions, though. So thank you so much for your willingness.
No, it's a privilege. I mean, you write the book and you think, it's out there. Hopefully
Right.
it'll help. Hopefully it'll help somebody.
Yeah. So you're currently living in Milwaukee. For people who haven't read your book, can you give us a short bio of how you are in Wisconsin now and where you have been in order to make that journey from England to Milwaukee, Wisconsin?
Okay, yeah, as brief and concise as I can do. I didn't grow up in a Christian home, so I was converted when I was 19 on a gap year in South Africa. And when I went back to England, I knew that I would eventually go back to South Africa as a missionary. So after finishing university and getting stuck into my local church, and doing a lot of mission incarnational stuff in the inner city, the poorer kind of council estates in England for about 8 years, and working for the church, I just sensed that God was calling me back to South Africa, to see kind of, I didn't have the language then, but kind of church planting movements. So I was part of a small team in Pretoria, South Africa, looking to plant a church in one of the townships in Pretoria. And it was kind of the classic, corrugated iron, kind of shanty town stuff. We did have a brick house. We were living there. I mean, it sounds grand, but it was only me and another girl. That was the sum total of the team. So, I was leading one person, but in the midst of that kind of experience, there was, on the right of me, in terms of the neighbors, Zimbabwe had just fallen at the time. So we had, it was a brothel with at least 25 to 30 Zimbabwean women. And then in front of us was a Hindu priest, and then to the left was an imam training school where they were raising, Muslim imams. And at that point, it dawned on me that everything I knew wasn't going to work in
Right. And I
that
imagine you and this other woman you were living with probably stood out in that community.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was the only white woman, and so they thought I was a politician to start with, and my friend was Zimbabwean, so why would we be there? So we had no money, we had no pastor, we were kind of sent from the local church, which was 15 minutes down the road, but it was light years away culturally. So you can't invite anyone to church, you can't do any programs, nothing. Missionally, no outreach that we were used to would work. So I started researching, other strategies, because I knew that we wanted to see disciples being made that could make disciples, that could make disciples in that context. So intuitively we also knew that it wasn't our responsibility to. The needs were huge. There was a kind of a xenophobia that went around South Africa at the time. So they were literally burning Zimbabweans in tires in the townships. And it was totally lawless. There's nothing that anybody could do. I mean, but it, in the midst of such such violence and crime, there was just a sense that God was there, and that he was, you know, he was going to do something, but we just didn't know how. So we started researching essentially disciple making movements, and it was a total God incidence that there was a guy that was catalyzing the movements across Africa, literally lived about 20 minutes down the road from me. So we contacted him, and he probably mentored me over about 3 years in essentially how to find people of peace and raise them up so that they're the ones that are bringing change in the gospel throughout their community. So it was an extraordinary time. Varying degrees of success and failure, because, you know, we were just kind of making it up as we went along, really. I ended up having post-traumatic stress and yellow fever after 5 years, so I had to go back to England. And that's when I did my master's in missiology and development. And after I did that, then I moved to Burundi to train local Burundians in essentially community transformation, but using disciple making movements as the key strategy for that.
When you say church planting movement, you're talking about more than kind of a conventional church that plants churches, which is something that we're very familiar with here.
Yeah.
You're talking about something that is synonymous with disciple making movements. Disciples, yeah, who make disciples, who make disciples, is kind of multiplying. Simple, can I call it like a simple church model?
Yeah, I think like maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the terminology was church planting movements, but recently the last 5 years, it's interchangeable with disciple making movements. And the reason that people are talking about disciple making movements is essentially we're not called to plant churches, we're called to make disciples, and churches are planted by doing that is the end result. So it's a new one
from yeah. Jesus. That's yeah. the yeah. you know that goes to the top. So yeah, just, yeah, the, yeah. The, when you say yeah, we're called to make disciples, you're talking about the Great Commission where Jesus says, "Go and make disciples of all nations."
So that was my role, to train local Burundians in how to see their communities, because it's the second poorest country in the world, see their communities transform with the gospel, with the primary strategy of making disciples, because so much of development is so programatized and it doesn't really change people's hearts. It's only making disciples that really changes anything. So yeah, that was an extraordinary time. And again, 5 years there. The problem was that Burundi started descending into civil war. In the midst of that, I met my husband, now husband. Our first date was in a conference center that was essentially a refuge for people as the shelling and the fighting was going on outside. It's quite odd talking about your hobbies over tea and toast. So we knew we could have a laugh in the middle of a stressful situation. So in the midst of the worst I've ever seen in terms of what humanity and the enemy can do, I still see God's goodness, you know, in the land of the living. It was extraordinary.
How did you end up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin?
We were essentially evacuated. Everyone had to leave the country. So Mark and I literally dated on about 4 different countries in 3 different continents for about 8 months. And finally decided to get married and had to plant ourselves somewhere. And Mark is from Milwaukee. His family are here.
Person of peace is something that you briefly mentioned, and yet it's a key in understanding what a disciple-making movement looks like. Can you kind of bring us back to where does that term come from? And what does it look like in your experience?
Yeah, great question, Aaron. And whatever movements you read about that's happening globally, the common strategy for trying to find people and disciple them is this finding this person called the person of peace, and that's found in Luke 10. Now in Luke 10, Luke 9, Jesus sends out the 12, and Luke 10, Jesus sends out the 72, and he sends them with the same instructions. So, you know, back 15 years ago when I'm living in the township, I thought the closer I can get to Jesus's pattern of ministry, the more effective and transferable it will be in any cultural context. So this specific task that he sets them is to go in pairs ahead of him to find this person of peace. Jesus is essentially saying that in these communities that he's about to go in, there are people that are open and ready to hear the message that he's already prepared in advance. So it's simply our job to find those people. As I'm kind of sitting in Township Pretoria, I realize it's not my job to change this community. It's my job to find the people of peace who God has already prepared in advance, because he will raise them up and they will reach their own, because the gospel essentially transfers through social networks. So we find this as the strategy of Jesus throughout the gospels and, you know, into Acts. You know, if you think of people like Zacchaeus, you know, he's a person of peace. And the end result of that is that his whole household comes to faith. You know, the woman at the well, again, Jesus engages her in essentially a spiritual conversation and reveals who he is. And the end result of that is the whole village comes to faith. Again, in the New Testament, in Acts, you see Paul with Lydia. And, you know, Peter with Cornelius. You know, God has been working in this Gentile. He's open and ready and has to, you know, give Peter a quick, swift kick to go and, you know, share the message with him. So this task of finding a person of peace, I think, is the most important thing for us to get hold of in mission, because it becomes about a lifestyle of mission and not about a program that we do 2 weeks a year or, you know, a few hours on a Saturday. We actually have to cultivate a lifestyle of how to find these people of peace in the communities that God has placed on our hearts to try and reach. If we're really going to see movements of the gospel that we read about in the Bible, it's going to take each one of us to be that witness and to find those people that God is giving us to disciple. I think, you know, if we want to see movements, it's not about professional Christianity. It's not about professional leaders or, you know, missionaries who do the job. It's about each one of us. That's partly why I wrote the book, because I want to get these simple tools into the hands of everybody, whether we see movements happen or not. I mean, that's essentially God's work, but what are the tools that we, or the best practices that we can use, that I think will liberate the body to go and make disciples? Because I think we've had some really quite unhelpful methodology for evangelism that's might have put a lot of people off or been quite discouraging. But I think if we can get hold of understanding how to find a person of peace and how to even identify one, I think, again, it will empower each person to partner with God in that, really.
Our vision is to see God's kingdom come as his will is being done on earth, yeah, as it is in heaven. And
yeah,
people who do God's will on earth as it is in heaven are disciples. So in order to see our communities, our hearts, our households, our neighborhoods look more like heaven, and to drive out those things that look more like hell, we have said the most important way we can do that is to make disciples. It all ties together. It's just been really tough to figure out how do you do that? What does that look like? This whole idea of the gospel transferring through social networks, not bringing people to a central place, but sending the gospel out, because there's one person in my social network who has a whole other social network that I'll never get to, and they would never walk into our church.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I want to know, as we have that kind of big vision in mind, that our hearts, our households, our neighborhoods would look more like heaven, that we would be partnering with God and driving out those things that look and operate like hell in our neighborhoods. How do we practically find a person of peace? And then what do we do about it?
You've got to be clear about what is the community that you're focusing on. You know, so you've got to pinpoint, is it a neighborhood? Is it a network of people? Who are the people that you're focusing on? Because sometimes we make it so broad that there's no target, which sounds terrible. I don't like to use the word target, but do you know what I mean? So once you've got that, then you really have got to find a million different ways of how to meet people of peace. And the easiest way to do that is to get involved with what's already going on. So in township, you know, South Africa, the thing that everybody did was played soccer. So I just joined the local women's soccer team.
I love that you're calling it soccer for our benefit. Well done.
I know.
Good cultural adjustment there.
I'm very bilingual.
Sure, you want to call it football, but you're in the Packers country, so.
I know. I think sometimes as a church, we think that we're the ones that has to put everything on to be able to connect with people. And that's not necessarily the case. I think sometimes the easiest thing to do is just to find out what's going on in the community and join in, because it gives you a purpose there. It develops trust quickly, and there's a reason to be there. So it doesn't cost you anything financially, but it does in terms of time. Most of the time, people don't find people of peace because they haven't got time. You know, that target community or whatever, they really spend very little time with non-Christians. The second thing in terms of finding people of peace is to find out what the needs are and try and connect with those needs. So, for example, you know, there's the church that we're in, they've got a food pantry. So it gives them access to a demographic of people in the inner city that we wouldn't have access to. But the problem was that the need became the vision. How do you use that as a vehicle to find people of peace instead of just the need becoming the vision? Because then it just becomes a program in itself. And everybody's time is sucked into keeping this program going, you know?
Yeah. So if I can speak to our congregation for a moment, because at the time that we're going to air this video live, we'll be gearing up for Backyard Missions, which we've said from the beginning, it's not about the projects. It's about the relationships. It's about the people. It's about finding an opportunity to have a conversation, to ask somebody, you know, you shared that concern with me. Can I pray for you? And to see what the openness is there. So thank you for that reminder. We do need to be constantly reminded. And the key word I think that you said is access. That when we're serving the community, we're really looking for those bridges, those doorways, those things that give us access into a community. Another thing that you said in your book that I just loved is you talk to people as if they're already believers.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
This has obviously been a journey for me over 20 years. I've been trying to find people of peace for 20 years, and it's still difficult. But what I realized is we either can sometimes be really preachy and religious, or we feel that we can't share anything because we don't know enough. You know, what if they ask me something I don't understand, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I think both of those can really hinder finding people of peace. Because what people of peace are they're open to spirituality. Our Christian spirituality is very simply three things that is, you know, is found in Deuteronomy, which is love the Lord your God and commit to his commands or obey his commands. And the third thing is talk about them. And I think we're all called to witness, and it encompasses those three things. Now, we might not all be evangelists, but I think the challenge for us is to live out this witness as a lifestyle. How do I love God? How do I obey what he says? And how do I talk about it? I started to realize that I just need to share as if everybody is a Christian. So, for example, when we first came to this community that we're living in, I didn't have a green card, and neither did my neighbor, who was from India and was a Sikh from India. So we had a lot of time, and we used to go for a walk, you know, maybe two or three times a week. One evening she'd say, you know, how's your day today? And I said to her, well, I've actually been struggling a bit today because I was reading the Bible this morning, and it said that I shouldn't worry about money. But the reality is I do worry about money. And I think what maybe God is saying to me in that is that he wants to break this fear of not having enough. And then I said to her, well, what do you think about that? And she said, well, I struggle about money. You know, I'm not working yet, you know, all that sort of stuff. And so the week later, then she asked me how are you feeling about all that money stuff? And I said, well, it's been amazing actually this week, because what we've decided to do is be more generous. Instead of holding on to money, be more generous. And actually twice we've had checks through the post for different, you know, different reasons. And she's like, that was amazing kind of thing. So what I tell you that because the conversation wasn't me trying to manipulate to talk about, you know, the death and resurrection of Jesus. It was simply me trying to share my love of God and how I'm trying to be obedient to what he's saying to me each day. And I'm, you know, talking about it. There's very little testimony without obedience. So because of our obedience, we see testimony and transformation in our life, like that example of the kingdom breaking into my life and breaking the fear of not having, you know, enough. So I think as we try and find people of peace, we're sharing that spirituality, which is communicating something of the kingdom breaking into our life and bringing transformation and change now, not waiting till we die. When somebody is open spiritually, it's so natural to talk about those things. It's not weird. They might not want to talk about church, but they want to talk about a spirituality that is changing and bringing transformation. So that's why I talk to everybody in that way. So the challenge is, are we loving God and are we obeying him and seeing that transformation in our life? Or are we sharing testimonies of 25 years ago when we just became a Christian and we stopped drinking or something? You know, and all of those are valid, but in order for us to find people who are spiritually open, we have to be spiritually open and in order to see transformation, you really can't get around being obedient to what God is saying and seeing that transform your life.
Looking for someone who's open to the conversation, what are some of the other qualifications that you look for in a person of peace?
In Luke 10, if you kind of read through that, the first thing is people of peace essentially welcome you into their lives, into their homes. And that, again, that's very liberating, because we don't have to stay with the people who aren't interested. It makes it much more fun and interesting.
Sure, yes.
So, and the second thing is like you've said, they are open. And they're open to listen to you, not just because you're a nice person, but because of your spirituality, like we've just talked about. And they open up other people to you. That's a big one. In a Western context, where it's much more fragmented and much more individual, it's not going to be as big as the extended family size that you see in the developing world in terms of numbers like that. It's going to be much smaller. But the principle's the same, is they open up other people to you. And that could just be their wife. It could be their neighbor. It could be just one or two people. And the last thing is they serve you. And this is really important, because if people think that they're a project to be fixed, that, you know, it's going to fall flat. They could be people of peace, but they'll be totally put off if they think, you know, we're there to be fixed. So when you allow people to serve you, it's awful to say, but it really challenges our Christian arrogance, that we've got all the answers, we've got everything, and us and them kind of thing. And it also prevents what you often see is the kind of provider-client relationship, which is very difficult to navigate and find people of peace when you're the provider and they're the client. Again, you know, they feel that they're the recipient, and it's difficult to get that equality. But when you allow people to serve you, you're essentially developing an equal relationship that's reciprocal. It is incredibly important to put yourself in a posture of developing equal relationships. When I've trained people, particularly in the West, who want, you know, the next program, the next quick fix, this isn't quick. Initially, it's incredibly slow and painful, because it takes months and years to find people of peace. You know, the parable of the sower, that there's only one field that produced fruit. I thought I was such a failure. I started 30 groups because I thought they were people of peace, and only three of them worked. But because they were three people of peace who discipled their household, then they multiplied and multiplied and multiplied. And through those, we saw a movement through the Zimbabwean refugees. It's very counterintuitive to focus on the few, but that's what you have to do. And it takes a long time. You know, when you're talking about one or two people, it doesn't feel very significant and very earth-shattering. So it's great to read about these movements with thousands and, you know, but the reality is it doesn't start that way. And it's not glamorous. So yeah,
that's a good way to put it, Jay. It's not glamorous. I think that's part of the beauty of doing things the way Jesus does. You make a disciple who then makes disciples who makes disciples. Those disciples probably don't even know who you are. You could have launched a movement that has seen 10,000 people come to Christ and are now destined for heaven, and what, six of them know you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah.
It's not glamorous.
Yeah.
And yet it is consistent with what we see in scripture.
It is. Yeah.
Wow.
It is.
Jenny, thank you so much for taking this time with me and the book for anybody who wants to check that out. This is what it looks like, living on the front line, lessons from 10 years in Africa. I just really appreciate you answering some of our questions today. And I am excited to catch up with you later on and have a conversation and let you know some of the feedback that I get or some of the efforts that people make and some of the things we discover about what this looks like in central Wisconsin. So thank you so much.
No, I really appreciate it, Aaron. Please, let's connect again.